Welcome to PhotoActive, a podcast about photography and technology. I'm Kirk McElhern.
And I'm Jeff Carlson.
You can find show notes, including any photos we discuss in this episode, at photoactive.co. That's photoactive.co. So some weeks ago, I saw an article about musicians wanting to buy more gear. It's called gear acquisition syndrome, and it hits musicians a lot. It hits people who are into audio, and it hits photographers. And so an interesting coincidence is today I just took delivery of a new amplifier.
Oh.
So I do another podcast called The Next Track with Doug Adams, and we talked about gear acquisition syndrome about a month ago because we were discussing this maybe 6 weeks ago, and we both agreed with Doug and with you that it would be good topics for each of the podcasts. And we talked about it in terms of audio equipment, and I pointed out, you know, it's been a year. My Sonos amp was my previous amp, and it's been like 5 years, and maybe it's time to upgrade. And I started looking, and I was thinking, you know what? Maybe I could upgrade in it. So just coincidentally, I got a new amplifier today. I have plugged it in, but I haven't finished setting it up entirely. And I guess this is just kind of karma that we're talking about gear acquisition syndrome on the day that I acquire something. Now, we don't want to tell photographers that they have gas, but a lot of photographers do.
I'm sorry. I'm a fourth grader. You said gas and it made me laugh. Yes. Yes. I mean, gear acquisition syndrome is a very real thing. And it's not just that you see something new and it looks interesting. Like, for all sorts of reasons, maybe a new lens comes out and you think, ah, I could really use that when I travel, or I've been looking for an affordable telephoto. There's that logic to it, right? To me, it seems like gear acquisition syndrome, it like tickles that little dopamine hit part of your brain that says, all right, I've got something new, or I need something new, or my photos are just kind of so-so. They'd be much better if I had a 40 megapixel body. And if I'm going to get a 40 megapixel body, I'm going to want something that would really take advantage of that. So maybe I should get an f1.4 prime lens. But if I have an f1.4 prime lens, that could limit me, and therefore I need some sort of a zoom. And the zoom that I have now works perfectly fine, but I read somewhere that maybe it won't work as well on my newer camera. And you know what I really need is like a 100 to 400 millimeter zoom. I could do a lot with that. But of course, I also need something really wide. So I think I need maybe like a 16 millimeter prime, if such a thing exists. And then you open your eyes and suddenly there's an email in your inbox and you've just spent $6,000 on equipment. And we're making a joke of this, but there's a very real aspect to this too.
The thought process works like that. The thought process works like that. I think it starts for a lot of photographers. Well, if you're just getting into photography, you've got a kit lens, a basic zoom lens, and you want to get something better. And that's understandable. You want to get a prime or two or six or
see,
whatever.
See, you're doing it now.
No, that was sarcastic.
Uh-huh.
But what happens a lot is you may be going on a trip someplace where you really need the Grand Canyon. You really need a good wide angle lens because you don't have one. In some ways, that's a valid reason to buy one, to have the photos of that trip, the memories of that trip, even if you're not going to use it mm-hmm. afterwards. But it's more just saying, well, there's this new wide-angle lens, and I only have a 16 and an 18 millimeter wide-angle lens, and a 14 would be nice. That sort of thing. Like you're kind of doing the collector thing, where you're checking off. You've looked at the lens roadmap for the manufacturer of your camera, and you're trying to make sure you have one of each, right?
Yes.
The thing is, so it is true that for some people, well, let me give you an example. When I saw – we talked about the Fujifilm X100 VI or X100 VI mm-hmm. recently. And I saw on Facebook, in a Facebook group I follow for X100 cameras, and some people were saying, it's not going to make your photos any better. And I said, well, you know what? For me, it might, because I have a Tremor and it has in-body image stabilization. And that's actually a feature that – is more useful than just gear acquisition syndrome. For most people, it might not make a difference, but depending on what your physical conditions are, on what kind of photography you do. There could be reasons to get the new camera, the new lens, the additional lens. The problem is when it becomes obsessive and that you get a new camera every year and a few new lenses every year. And it's a good time to do it. It's like May or June, just before the summer. They have these cashback offers and discounts. And by the way, if you have serious gear acquisition syndrome, I recommend, I don't know how many camera manufacturers do this, but Fujifilm, at least here in Europe, has a refurbished store.
Oh, right.
So you can get stuff much cheaper. And so you can buy three lenses instead of two, that kind of thing. But, you know, we're joking about it, but it's real. Right. I mean, you and I, we've both spent our time poring over the specifications and comparing the prices and looking at different places. And should I get this? Would that be better and all? It's actually – photography is actually easy compared to audio equipment. Right.
Oh, man,
when you
I'll
look
bet.
At amplifiers and speakers, there's so many different things. Photography, if it's cameras and lenses, you're stuck with a manufacturer. There are some third party
sure.
lenses, true, but not that much. In audio, you have this vast spectrum of stuff, speakers and amplifiers and CD players and everything. So it's even more complicated. It's the thing is, see, a lot of people take photos and they consider it a hobby. With a capital H. And it's part of their annual cycle to buy something new every year before summer comes when they're going to travel or take more pictures and maybe buy a new camera every 2 years because it's part of the process for them. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong at all. What's wrong, though, is if you hold on to all those old things and you don't sell them and you keep them in the closet, because there's nothing wrong with buying a camera, selling it 2 or 3 years later for half its value, putting that half its value toward a new camera, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We also have to bring up the very important part of the gear acquisition syndrome where you blot out like what your credit card bill becomes or – have I just used some of my savings, my life savings, toward buying a new Leica when I really probably shouldn't have? And then, like all of the justifications and all the reasons that that you talk yourself into buying something. I think part of gear acquisition syndrome is that psychological aspect of, you know what, I really do need this. Not that this would be a good lens. Like, I need this. And you talk yourself into it and you go onto YouTube and you see all the glowing reviews of the new whatever. And you think, oh, well, I would enjoy the experience more. I always find that it's a fight between my rational mind. It's like, okay, like I have X amount of money to spend and I'm in the market to buy something new versus, wow, it looks like this lens really makes a huge difference for this YouTube guy. And he kind of shoots the stuff that I shoot. So maybe that'll make a huge difference for me. So there's always that tension. I think bringing up the Fuji X100 VI was a really good example because as listeners know, I have an X100V, which has been a great camera. I took it to Sweden with me and took some 300 some shots just with that. And the things that you mentioned, it has the in-body image stabilization, it has the higher resolution sensor, so 40 megapixels. And I can come up with very good reasons to buy that. I mean, after shooting with a camera that has IBIS, it really does make a difference. I've been able to do that this year with some loaner cameras for DP review. Before, the camera that I own is the Fuji X-T3, so it doesn't have that.
That's an old one.
I know, it's an old one. That's
yeah,
my –
what are you doing with an old camera like that, Jeff?
Well, see, but that's also part of it is that I have not needed – and I'm going to put that in italics. I've not needed a better camera than that. And when I have, I've been able to borrow it or rent it or what have you. But now I'm looking at the X100 VI, and having the in-body image stabilization is great because you can shoot handheld at lower shutter speeds, which is really great if you don't have any tripod or whatever, especially for something like this. Like it's a small, compact carry around camera. You're not going to carry around a tripod with it. And also the resolution would be great because it is a fixed lens camera. There's only one focal length and so gives you more latitude to be able to crop in and still have good resolution. So all of that is going around in my mind thinking, wow, this would be a great camera for what I shoot. I like the form factor of the 5 and the V. And then it sort of runs into that wall of, all right, yes, this camera would be a good fit for me. Now, do I need to spend the money right now? No, not really. Also take into account the fact that if I were to order a 6 today, it could be months and months before I get it because they're back ordered and very popular and all of that.
Gear acquisition syndrome does not work if it's delayed. It has to be immediate, unless you're ordering something as soon as it's announced and you know you're going to get it pretty quickly. But if you have to order it and you're on a waiting list for 6 months, that just doesn't work.
It's an impulse, right? Rather than just a studied – I don't want to make it sound like people are out of control.
You start with the impulse. No, you start with the impulse and then you start rationalizing. You do the pros and the cons. You compare with other things. You try to determine if you want to sell the one you have, how much can you get toward the new one? And there is a lot of rationalization. If money's not an issue, then it's an impulse. You see it, you click and you buy.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, that's what photography is. I know people who have plenty of money and they really like having the new thing. And they try it out and maybe they use it for a bit and sell it or give it away or whatever. For some people, I'm sure we've mentioned this on the podcast before, having the gear, getting the gear, using the gear, that is as much of photography as focusing on where you go or what you take pictures of. And that's okay. I think gear acquisition syndrome, in the way that we're talking about it, falls somewhere in that middle realm of I have desire.
Pathology?
Maybe pathology, yeah. I have a desire to get something new. I don't necessarily have a need for it, but I have a desire for it because it sparks some sort of internal desire, internal need that will make me feel better by having purchased something, regardless of whether it's something that will practically help me or. And of course, we should also point out this isn't just cameras and lenses. I mean, this can be triggers and filters and lighting gear. Oh my God. Like
maybe camera bags.
Camera bags.
The search for the perfect camera bag. I don't know about you, but I found my perfect camera bags, the Peak Design Slings. I have this small one and the medium size one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are great. The perfect camera bags for me. I've had them for years now. Yeah. So that acquisition is over. Sometimes that happens. You find something and it's just right. And it can turn off a switch to say, I don't need to try anymore.
Oh my God. Bags are probably one of the worst things because yes, the Peak Slings are great. When I'm not carrying like a backpack where I need to my laptop, I'll bring a sling because it's super handy. Here. It's great. Is it the perfect camera bag? Maybe in
for me it
in
is.
In many situations.
No, for me it is. I don't look at camera bags anymore. It's gotten to that point. It cured me. Peak Design Sling cured me. Camera straps, it's the same. Peak Design with their anchors, it cured me. I want to mention something. I don't know if I've mentioned it on this podcast. There's a Buddhist term called dukkha. If you've heard about Buddhism, you tend to think that it says that all life is suffering, and that's not what it is. In the first of the Four Noble Truths, it's more that suffering is an integral part of life. And the word for suffering is dukkha. Dukkha originally meant a wonky wagon wheel, right? You're in a wagon and it's uneven and all that. And dukkha is, I want this and I can't have it. I have this, there's too much of it, and I want to get rid of it. It's, I want the new lens. It's, I'm eating this ice cream. It's really good. I'm eating this ice cream. Uh-oh, too much. I feel sick now. Dukkha is like friction. And it comes in this sort of, as you said, it's a desire to have something, whether or not you need it. That desire is fulfilled. You mentioned the term dopamine hit early. Mm-hmm. And you open the box and, ooh, shiny, dopamine. 3 days later, the dopamine's gone. It depends on whether you're using the device,
sure,
how much you're using it, what kind of device it is. Is it something you only use on the weekend? Is it a bicycle you use on the weekend and not during the week? So there's different ways of apprehending that.
This episode is brought to you by Nitro, the brand new photo editor and manager from the developer of Raw Power. Designed for every photographer and every photograph, Nitro combines flexible storage options, unmatched camera support, and professional editing tools. If you liked Aperture or Raw Power, you'll love Nitro. On the editing side, Nitro includes full masking support with AI masks, gradients, and brushes. Remove dust blemishes and other imperfections using clone and spot removal tools. And, just like Raw Power, you can apply Raw-specific tone and tuning adjustments. Nitro gives you more control over Apple's Raw decoder than any other app. For organizing, your photos can live in Apple's Photos library or in the file system, with support for XMP sidecars and synchronizing metadata and edits with iCloud Photo Library. Nitro also supports more cameras and formats than Photos, Darkroom, or Photomator, including compressed Fujifilm RAW files. And while comparing shots, synchronize, pan, and zoom up to 16 images at a time. Try Nitro for free for 7 days without any obligation. No subscription sign-up, no nonsense. Check it out at nitrophoto.app. That's nitrophoto.app.
There's another type of acquisition syndrome that I am incredibly guilty of. I mean, this is the worst one for me. The Japanese word is tsundoku. Tsundoku is the act of buying books to read them later.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Like, you're not buying it because you need a book to read. You're buying it because you have 300 books and you're putting it on your to-be-read shelf. And, you know, one day I want to retire. I'm going to read all these books, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's my real acquisition syndrome. A lot less expensive than lenses.
Yeah, although you also tend to buy a lot of photo books too, and that can also get right up there.
Fewer and fewer, and I sold off a bunch recently.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I've culled a bunch that I didn't want. I found someone who gave good money for them, actually quite good money for a bunch of them.
Excellent.
So I've been culling, because you know that I do this. I buy and I sell.
Yeah.
Like when I bought my Leica Q3 a year and a half ago, I sold my Q2 monochrome and all my Fujifilm equipment, and I had a profit of like £1,500 after buying the Q3.
Oh, right, right.
So it didn't even cost out of pocket. I made a profit. So, you know, I do that. I sell things on eBay or, you know, in other ways in order to fund the new things. But there is that risk. See, I like having the Q3 because I can't buy any lenses for it. Mm-hmm. There's no real accessories I need. I got tripods. I got camera bags. Yeah. So there's it's like a gear acquisition syndrome killer.
You found like a gear acquisition balance right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in a good point of stasis where you don't need anything else right now. You're certainly tempted by things like the X106, but not so much that you're losing your mind and rationalizing what you need to sell or you know, what extra work you need to take on in order to buy this, that, or the other. Yeah.
I would buy an X106, though, and I told you that, to have a smaller, more inexpensive camera. Maybe I can get one this year.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're going to be available. That's an incredible marketing story. And that is, in some ways, is it gear acquisition syndrome? Because a lot of the people who are buying this may not be people who actually owned a camera before. They're stepping up from a phone camera, mm-hmm. and they see this. They like the retro look. No camera in my history, in my photography history, has been as popular as this has, and to the point that the manufacturer can't make them quick enough.
Yeah. And that's even – I mean, they couldn't make the 5 quick enough, and now with the 6, they've even expanded their capacity, and even so, it's not enough. The 6 is a great example of desiring after a camera because not just the looks and not just the capabilities, but it has an aura of cool, and that if you have this camera, which – performs really well, is small, it has limitations, so you're not having to figure out how many lenses to carry with it, that having that will make you a more creative photographer, or it'll make you want to travel more because you have a better way to take pictures of areas outside your town or state or go up in the mountains or whatever. That mix of marketing and technology and, I don't know, just hype that I don't think that they could even manufacture also ties into that this is a thing that I really, really want. The dopamine hit is the thing for me. Like, it triggers that desire for something and not just the analytical, yes, I could buy this lens and use it 48% more than I use another one because this is the focal range that I prefer. Like, it's not that analytical.
I think with the X100, though, for a lot of people, it is it is the only camera they have, and they're not necessarily in the actual gear acquisition syndrome. For me, gear acquisition syndrome is you're already in the world of photography, yeah. Music, audio, guitarists who want to own 10 guitars, you know, that sort of thing. And you want to have more because, well, this guitar sounds a little bit better for this kind of music. Or guitar pedals, that's the new thing. You could have 100 of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit different than people just wanting one thing, right? Like, people want to buy a car. Very few people buy more than one car. Mm-hmm. Maybe a family has two cars, but no one who doesn't have a lot of money has six cars.
Right.
Like, they would have six zoom lenses, right? What they do buy for cars, and this is beyond me, why someone would pay £1,000 for fancy wheels on a car that you never even see when you're driving.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I just don't get that. Why anyone would pay extra for different colors of paint on the car? What's that about, right?
Well, I mean, that's also fashion. You have plenty of shirts and pants. Why would you buy others?
If I told you the last time I bought a shirt, you would be very surprised.
So the
not that I have
generally
not that I have ratty clothes. No, so this is me. Many years ago, this is about 8 or 10 years ago, I found these Lands' End flannel shirts.
Uh-huh.
They make them in two weights. They make a light one and a heavy one. And I said, these shirts are great. I bought like six of the heavy ones, six of the light ones. Every once in a while, I'll buy a few more. I haven't bought any since before COVID.
Yeah.
They last a long time. Like socks, I buy the same socks. So I don't even have to worry about them pairing, right?
Right.
I buy things like that because I don't like buying clothes.
Right.
I really don't.
I don't like buying clothes either. So, but for a lot of people,
but that's another example of gear acquisition syndrome.
It is. Yeah. 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 And it's also a form of expression, fashion and car accessories and things like that. And I think even photography, there's a certain level of the strap that you buy.
If you're in a local photo club, you want to be the guy who saunters in with the Hasselblad, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's some social pressure to it as well.
God, capitalism is evil.
Capitalism is evil, and yet it makes us feel good briefly.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't.
That's the thing.
For some strange reason, I hadn't even considered bags because I was thinking hardware. I was thinking camera lenses and all that stuff. Bags is such a deep hole to fall down into because although you found your perfect bag, I think for most people, the perfect bag doesn't exist. Maybe you want something that is a messenger bag style, and then you realize, well, actually, I need a backpack style. I have bags up in my office there was one that seemed super promising.
They still have the tags on them.
They don't have the tags on them, no. But there's one that I bought, and it was a relatively expensive bag. I can't remember the make now, but it had an interesting way of getting into it and little pockets to hold everything. And it seemed like a really great bag. And in practice, it was a pain in the butt. But I still have it up there because
– eBay, Jeff.
You know what?
eBay.
I am convinced eBay must be different in the UK than it is in the US because it is such a cesspool of scam and crap here. I don't even try.
Well, you know, I've been very lucky. I've sold Macs. I've sold iPads and iPhones. I've sold Apple Watches. I sold my Q2 monochrome.
That blows me away.
Now, when I sold the Q2 monochrome, I looked at the buyer. I looked at the buyer's name and information, and I found out who he was. He was someone who was a sculptor who lived in a different part of the UK.
Okay.
And I sold it collection only because it was a pretty expensive camera.
Yeah.
And he was fine. He drove up from London. We chatted for an hour. He was very happy with the camera. I would not have shipped a camera that expensive.
Oh, no.
But I've never had a problem. I did have a problem once. I sold 10 years ago an Olympus, a relatively inexpensive Olympus. And I had taken pictures. It was a plastic body and the the finish had rubbed off a little, and mm-hmm. I showed them in the pictures. And the person made a complaint, and, well, I went through eBay's process and said, well, look at the pictures, and it's fine. And then the person said, well, it rattles. And I said, duh. That's called in-body image stabilization. Some cameras rattle because of that.
Yeah.
And it's true. It could be surprising if you don't know that. But it's the only time I ever actually had a problem.
Yeah.
But maybe I've been lucky.
I mean, maybe it's just because the UK is a smaller market than the US or something. But I don't know what it is. I hear your experiences and you're like, yeah, I just sold this expensive Mac on eBay. And whenever I look at eBay, it's just crap. It's just layers and layers and layers of crap. A friend of mine was selling a Sony a7R IV, so like the previous generation, really nice camera. And, you know, all the things, you know, had the pictures of it, was very much going to sell it to somebody local. These are the terms. This is what I'm selling it as. Do it in person. Not going to ship it anywhere. And he had to wade through so much crap of people who were like, well, hey, how about if I give you $1,000 and can you bring it to Vancouver?
But you ignore them. I always get them. You just ignore them. You just don't answer them. It's not a big deal. They don't buy it. They send you an email saying, well, I want to buy it now. I really need it for my son or something. And I'll give you this if you give me your PayPal. Don't do it. You just ignore them. Ignore them.
But you still have to ignore
it. And also, when someone does buy it, look at their feedback. If they've never bought anything before, only one or two things, then that's, you know, a big red flag.
Yeah.
But you are protected by eBay. So in any case, if you don't want to sell camera stuff to eBay, use MPB. I've used them here in the UK. They give good prices. You can also buy used stuff. Now, you don't get the same dopamine hit when you buy used gear than when you buy new gear because it smells different, right? It doesn't have that new gear smell.
No, that's true. That's true. It doesn't have that aura of having never been unwrapped. That's a good point. That's a good point. Although, I mean, you could totally go to town and be like, oh, you know what? I can get three lenses for the price of this brand new one. And then the gas spins up a little bit more, but it's not a solvable problem, but
it's not. And we're not criticizing anyone. We're just pointing out that we all succumb to it. And some of us manage to get over it for certain things. Like I've managed camera stasis, as you said, and for my shirts, I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. And I buy more books that I can read.
You know what? In the long list of problems in the world, buying more books than you can read is like, that's the problem to have. Oh no, I'm surrounded by books.
Because when the zombie apocalypse comes and I have all those books, people will bring me food to be able to borrow my books.
There you go.
Okay. How about snapshots? What have you got?
Yes, I have a snapshot. So I can't remember if we've mentioned this or not, but there is a TV show on, I want to say it's Disney/National Geographic, that is called Photographer. And it's a, I want to say, 6-episode limited documentary series where each episode basically goes and hangs out with a photographer, a working professional photographer, and follows them either on a project or talks a little bit about their lives. I've only seen one so far, and it was on Dan Winters, which was an interesting look at – he's a guy who – he's done a whole lot of celebrity portraiture, but also just a wide, wide range of topics. And some of this was about a photo project that he's been wanting to do. He's like super obsessed with old shipyards and old boats, and he wanted to go to I can't think of the country. Some country where they process and repair a lot of you know, big old steel ships. And so part of it is the process of him trying to do this project, but a lot of it was just about him and his history and his wife. And you know, he's had mental health issues for a long time, and he was in a terrible bike accident, and it tells the story of a photographer rather than just sort of looking at their photography or the impact that maybe their photography has had. And I found it to be a nice, well-rounded look at photographers as people and also why they do what they do. You'll have to find it. IMDb says it's streaming on Freevee and ABC and Hulu, Disney, You'll have to search it out, unfortunately, because it's a streaming thing. But it's very well produced and really interesting. And you know us. We like to talk to people and find out why they do what they do, and especially people who are doing interesting different types of photography. So I highly recommend it. And it's just called Photographer. Okay, Kirk, what about you?
I happen to have a TV series as well, and I think you know what it is because you mentioned it on Mastodon a week or two ago when I replied to you and I said it's going to be my next snapshot
pick. Oh, yes.
It's Ripley on Netflix. Now, I'm a big fan of Patricia Highsmith, and so this is taken from her novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley, which is the first of five Ripley novels. There had been a movie of this with Jude Law and
Matt Damon.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Matt Damon as well, and you can't tell this kind of a story in a two-hour movie. You need an eight-episode series, you know, 8 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the actor Andrew Scott, who plays the lead in this. He was in Fleabag and some other things. I saw him do a Hamlet here. Not really like his style, but he's extremely restrained in this. First of all, he's speaking with an American accent, so he doesn't have this tendency to finish his sentences like this, because he's Irish and he's got that upspeak and he tends to always sound like he's asking questions. He's very restrained and very subtle. But what struck me from the beginning, from the first minute or so, was the simply gorgeous, unforgettable cinematography in high contrast, black and white. It's film noir, but it's also, it's black and white photography. It's, there are a lot of still shots transitioning between scenes that are of the statues in Italy. This takes place in Italy and Rome and in a couple of other places. And there are these light and shadow shots that are these, this is film noir sort of third man type cinematography. It is brilliant. It is brilliant cinematography. Now, this is written and directed by Steve Zalian, who I believe is an Oscar-winning screenwriter who wrote Sophie's Choice, among other things. The cinematographer is someone named Robert Elswit. They're both in their 70s. He also won an Academy Award for There Will Be Blood. What's interesting is that these are both old guys, right, in their 70s, who were doing this sort of passion project. I read that this was originally produced to be on Showtime, and Showtime decided that they didn't want to show it. You know that there was this story about all these streaming services last year canceling shows to get tax write-offs.
Yeah.
And this apparently was one of them and moved to Netflix. It's just from the cinematography point of view, it's brilliant. You have to watch it if you like black and white photography. The series itself is very good. It's slow. It's very slow. It moves very slowly. It's slow. This is a warning. If you're expecting something from the DC Marvel Expanded Universe, this is not it. This is slow. This is really gradual psychological thriller. It's a wonderful story, and it kind of makes me think at the end that there's going to be another season. Mm. So Ripley on Netflix.
Yeah, I've watched the first episode, and it's not often you can watch something and think, every single shot here was drop-dead gorgeous. Just yep. The intent and the composition in every shot, even like little throwaway things are not throwaway things. It's just
even amazing. Those interstitial shots between scenes where you get maybe three photos of statues or something in the water or things going on. And it's like every single – I would love to have seen the storyboards for this, because this is an amazing amount of work, over 8 hours of filming too.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really good.
Thanks for listening to Photoactive. You can find show notes, including any photos we discuss in this episode, at photoactive.co. That's photoactive.co. We couldn't afford the M. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/photoactivecast. That's photoactivecast in one word. You can subscribe to Photoactive in your favorite podcast app or on Apple Podcasts. See the links on our website. And think about leaving us a rating or review in iTunes or in your podcast.